Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thoughts. And we're back as we witness the inevitable decline of the West into third world, into the third world, I guess. The gutter of the third world, the sewer of the third world. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to be sitting atop the sliding pile of festering. It's just embarrassing. It's an example here. Let's go to Philadelphia, where you like a cheesesteak. I like a cheesesteak. I'm coming to a point in my life where I won't be able to eat a cheesesteak anymore for fear of dying. So it's amazing when you're young. You just eat whatever you want and it doesn't matter. That was almost my whole life. I just ate whatever I wanted. I never cared, never thought about it. Now everything I eat, I can tell what I ate based on like what I dream and how much I wake up at night and how much the left side of my stomach hurts a little bit. Anyway, there's coming a time when I won't be able to have a cheesesteak. Right? I'll just be eating kale or something like that. Yeah, kale. I don't know. We'll be able to eat. But I like a cheesesteak. But if you go to Philadelphia and you want a cheesesteak, I've got a report here from Jim's West. Jim's West Steaks, which is a cheesesteak place in Philly. They recently hired armed security to deter crime during peak business hours. Security guards will be present there from Thursday to Sunday. Just like in Guatemala in the third world at the grocery store where you go. There's like a short, fat Mexican guy with a shotgun standing in front of a grocery store. That's what it'll be like. That's what it's like in Philadelphia now to try to get a cheesesteak. Listen, a video posted by Jim's West to their Instagram page showed customers standing in line, and as the camera panned down the line, there was a guard holding an assault rifle. So it's like Philly guy, fat chick in a weird shirt with a strange hat, guy with a machine gun, Philly guy in a baseball cap. Uh-huh, that's it. So going to get a cheesesteak in Philadelphia, you got to dodge the zombies dropping dead in the streets from the trank fentanyl thing going on there, and then you finally get to where you can get a cheesesteak, there's a guy with a machine gun to make you feel better. Does a guy with a machine gun at the sandwich shop make you feel better? It doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel fairly embarrassed to have been involved in this whole thing. So I want to apologize for whatever part I had in letting this whole thing slip this far. I'm very sorry. All right, so that's Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And a guy with a machine gun at the sandwich shop because we're free. We're free Americans. We go. All right. So from there we go to, I'm not sure what to call this. This is from the politics file where a new Government Accountability Office report. That's the GAO. The Government Accountability Office is an office I've been hearing about, at least as I recall, since I was about 11. I remember that the Government Accountability Office was an office that actually kept track of what all was being squandered on what incredibly stupid, wasteful thing. And they would issue a report. People would be embarrassed. Sometimes people would resign. Sometimes people would even be arrested, tried and sentenced based on reports that came out of the Government Accountability Office. It's been called a nonpartisan office there in the federal bureaucracy, designed to help keep track and make sure nobody's ripping us off. Make sure that all of our elected officials and the bureaucrats that they hire, including their cousins and their mistresses and their dim-witted stepsons, that none of them are ripping us off. Or at least they try to keep the ripping us off to a minimum. And every once in a while, try to get someone in trouble over it to try to keep some kind of lid on all of the robbery that's happening. That's what the Government Accountability Office always was. Or at least it seemed to me, probably because I'm naive. But a new GAO report estimates that COVID-era unemployment fraud ran approximately three times more than their last report estimated, somewhere between $100 and $135 billion was robbed from the massive amounts of money that we all threw at COVID in a hysterical panic. Well, mostly our governing officials threw the money at COVID, and mostly because there were friends of theirs standing nearby to catch a lot of it. So COVID-era unemployment fraud is estimated right now at between $100 and $135 billion. That's three times more than they thought when they first looked at it two times ago. See, that's right. They say nearly triple the number cited in last year's study, which I think was triple the one from the year before, which before that they didn't really look at it because nobody wanted to know, because it was just shocking to think how many trillions of dollars were expropriated, vomited out, just gone in what seemed like a matter of moments, trillions of dollars. And so there you have it. I'm going to estimate how much money did we throw at COVID? I think it was 7 trillion, or was it 14 trillion, or was it 21? Are we even counting anymore? I'm going to estimate that the amount of COVID era unemployment fraud is approximately $1.3 trillion. Why do I think that? Because the GAO says it's $1.3 billion. So I'm going to assume that it's actually $1.3 trillion, about 1,000 times what they're telling us. About 1,000 times. So I know they keep bumping it up by a third. No, it's 1,000 times. $1 trillion was robbed. Okay? And by the way, COVID-era unemployment programs worked exactly as designed. This is exactly how they were designed to work. So that there was so much money flying and so much panic and so much terror and so much fear and loathing and accusations flying left and right that at the end of the day, when the dust settles, nobody can keep track of where any of the money went. And that's exactly how it was designed to work. So that the people and the institutions that perpetrated the fraudulent, deceitful, hysterical panic upon the American people lined their pockets with all of the money that they scared us all into believing that we had to throw at this thing. And so they walk away with all the money, and they fundamentally undermine the economic system so that it's closer and closer to the collapse that they all desire, so that they can institute the final stages of their Marxist takedown of America, which is what COVID really was. It was the Marxist takedown of America, facilitated by the hysterical panic of a cowardly generation. That's what it was. And so there you have. So that's the GAO, the Government Accountability Office. Let's check in with them, I think, again. Here we go. I've got another story from the Government Accountability Office. This is from the Legal Industrial Complex. You know that Eisenhower warned us about the military industrial complex. And the military industrial complex is something we need to keep track of, keep our eyes on, make sure we're not getting ripped off by a bunch of politicians who are getting political donations from defense contractors, and the defense contractors get defense contracts. makes the defense contractors rich, and then they write a check to the politician who got them the contract, and before you know it, we're being victimized by the military-industrial complex. Well, set that aside, because the military-industrial complex is child's play compared to the legal industrial complex that has developed now. Eisenhower warned us back in the, what was it, 1950s? Child's play compared to what the lawyers are about to do. The generals and the lobbyists and the congressmen have nothing on the lawyers. When all the lawyers get together on both sides of the deal, that's when you really have to be afraid. Be very afraid. It's the legal industrial complex. And we have the latest report from justthenews.com. Thousands of U.S. service members, according to a GAO report, are living in substandard barracks. That's right. And they're suffering through exposure to sewage, non-existent heating, and potential serious safety and health risks for our beloved service members, according to a new governmental report issued last week by the Government Accountability Office. And then the Just the News journalist, I suppose, it might be a cut and paste job. I don't know. This might be an AP report. Anyway, they say, quote, the GAO is a congressional agency that examines how taxpayer dollars are spent and provides Congress and the federal agencies with objective, nonpartisan, fact-based information. And so if that was cut and paste, that was cut and paste from sometime back around 1983, back when the GAO sometimes did some of that. Meaning providing Congress with objective, nonpartisan, fact-based information. At this point in history, circa 2023, that is no longer the case. The GAO is now an organ of the deep state. It's an organ of the deep state playing a tune written by the legal industrial complex. And so what does the GAO report say? Well, it's very detailed. It's very detailed. They sampled 10 barracks. And all of the barracks were decrepit, deplorable. Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems were broken, malfunctioning, or non-existent. Meaning what? Some of the our troops probably can't even breathe. There's no ventilation. How do they get air? This could lead to long-term safety and health risks. That's right. Now, they conducted these studies of the barracks there at, let's see, four installations in the D.C. area and others, Fort Carson, Colorado, Joint Base San Antonio, Naval Base Coronado, and the MCRD Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego, California, and at Camp Pendleton, California, where the Marine boot camp is and a large Marine Corps base. And so let me tell you what this is now. 40 years ago, we would have looked at this GAO report and would have taken it as what it was intended to be in some bureaucrats trying to keep a lid on the robbery and mistreatment and just the general incompetence that's riven throughout government. That's what we would have taken it as. But now, this GAO report is the foundation of a new lawsuit racket that will gear up a few years from now. That's right. So if you were ever a Marine, by the way, I guarantee you, you're getting emails about the Camp Lejeune settlement that's going on. The water at Camp Lejeune! It was back 20 years ago, there was a report from the GAO that said that the water at Camp Lejeune may have led to serious safety and health risks. And now here, 20 years hence, I get an email twice a week asking me if I want to participate in the Camp Lejeune lawsuit, settlement, shakedown, whatever you want to call it. Now, me, myself, personally, I never set foot on Camp Lejeune. But still, the lawyers are badgering me. They want me involved. You know, my dad was at Camp Lejeune. He's been dead for a couple years. Maybe I could submit his name and accuse them of killing him, and I could get some of the shakedown money from the Camp Lejeune deal. Maybe, possibly, so here's what's happening. The GAO now does a study that's going to fund lawsuits 10 or 20 years from now because the lawyers and the racketeers have infiltrated the GAO, and they're on this side and they're on that side, and they're all running a scam. America's government has become irredeemable, and it must fall. And so that's not a threat or a call for revolution or a call for an insurrection or anything like that. It's just an observation of the natural laws and how they work and where we are now. Don't say it's over. It's the Weekly Worldview. And thank you for sticking with us through that, through all of this. I've got another report here from the disinformation file. The Transportation Security Administration has been found to be deficient in 8 of 10 categories. And they've been found incapable of quickly detecting and responding to and recovering from a cyber attack. Who is that according to? It's according to their own Homeland Inspector General. That's right. He investigated his own agency and found it to be deficient. That's right. Now, this was a couple of weeks ago because I wasn't all that interested in this story until I saw the related pattern to Camp Lejeune and the MCRD and the serious health benefits. And now I realize what's going on. So the Homeland Inspector General, he basically has done an inspection and has come to the conclusion that his agency needs more money. That's right. Now, we're all fortunate, though, in that the TSA's mission and its mission readiness has no bearing on our actual travel safety or anything, because it's all just really stupid. Everything the Transportation Administration, the Transportation Security Administration does at the airport is a ludicrous, stupid exercise in stupidity. And it has no bearing on anybody's safety. So if everyone at the Transportation Security Administration suffered a conniption all at the same time and they all dropped to the floor and had to be rushed to the hospital, we would just pick up our bags and get ourselves to the airplane, and we would all manage to muddle by somehow. And Mustafa with his bomb and his turban. Anyway, it's all a complex, a serious complex, a military, industrial, legal, psychopathic complex. All right, so let's go from there to Maine. Let's go to Maine. Why? For reason number 2032, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. That's right. Up in Maine, a father who was loyally feeding his child into the government schools as he had been instructed by his parents and his grandparents and everyone around him in his circle of influence and friends and neighbors and family members, they all said, take your kid down and feed her into the public schools because it'll be good for her. She'll get an education. She'll be able to have a career. Take her down there, Dad. Drop her off. Come on. It's good for her. Anyway, the father, he's now upset that a health clinic operating within his daughter's high school sent her home with a baggie of prescription antidepressants. Not the prescription bottle like you see right at the, you know, you go to the drugstore, you get the bottle. It's brown. It's got the label on there with the red stamps that tell you what to do. And it's got the child-resistant cap that you fight with to try to get your pills. You know. No, they didn't send her home with one of those. They sent her home with a baggie full of Zoloft pills. A baggie, I said. You know, like, back anyway, a baggie of pills. So, the father said he discovered the baggie of pills, and his daughter told him it was provided to her by the health center at the school. So, Dad immediately suspects you're lying to me. They're not giving you a baggie of pills at the health clinic at school. You probably got these from some punk kid who I'm going to kill. Well, it turns out Dad calls down to the health center at his daughter's high school, and they said, yes, we did give your daughter a baggie of pills. Now, there's still someone who needs to be killed, absolutely, or at least severely injured. Anyway, so Dad finds out that the pills were not obtained on the streets or in the playground. Do they have playgrounds at high schools? Anyway, but she actually got the pills from the health center. Dad called the principal to complain, but the principal said, it's out of my hands. The health center is a completely standalone entity. I have nothing to do with anything at all to do with anything to do with the health clinic that operates at my school where I'm the principal, but it's not me. So Dad called the clinic, and the clinic told him, they informed Dad, hey, Dad, you may not know this, but we are legally allowed to give your daughter prescription drugs without informing you, Dad. And not only that, we're not going to even address the fact that the pills were sent home with your daughter without even a child-resistant, tamper-proof pill bottle. It's the fact that it was in a baggie. You know what, Dad? We don't have to tell you anything. Just shut up. Move along. Well, I'm sure they didn't say it like that. I'm sure they were much nicer about it. But they did inform him that legally they were allowed to give his daughter prescription drugs without informing him. Why? Well, you dropped her off, Dad. What do you want? Huh? So anyway, the good news. There's good news from this story. Number one, Dad got a hold of the pills. So the girl probably only took the one Zoloft that the clinician asked her to take there at school when he realized what's horrible mental problem she had. Here, take this quick, kid. So she probably only took one, and then Dad found them. The second piece of good news is Dad pulled his daughter out of the public schools that day. Pulled her out. Now, we don't have a report on whether or not she went back or not, but that is good news that he pulled her out. What does it say here? He pulled her out of the school and has made appointments for her with a doctor and a therapist. Okay, Dad. You know what she needs, Dad, is a minister. That's a pastor. That's what she needs, Dad, and so do you, I think. Pops. Anyway, you know what the therapist is going to do? He's going to give her more pills, but he'll put them in the right bottle. I don't know. It's just... She'll have a tamper-proof bottle so the smaller kids at home can't get into them until it's time to abuse them. Yeah, Dad says he has two smaller kids at home. He was worried they might get into the baggie of pills.
Well, that's why
he was upset. Well, that was one of the reasons. He was also upset that they gave her powerful antipsychotic or whatever drugs, mind-altering chemicals without at least asking Dad. I mean, you'd think they'd have the common courtesy to ask, because most parents these days, they'll be just like, yeah, well, how do you spell that? Okay, let me make sure I give her the right. How many pills should she be taking? Oh, okay, I'll give them to her. But they didn't even ask. All right, so there's reason number 2032 to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. They want to get your kids hooked on mind-altering drugs, so that they can then occupy their minds with just satanic, wicked evilness. That's all. And that's not hyperbole, by the way. Okay, so there's Dad in Maine. Oh, what kids? It's just, you feel for these people. But then on the other hand, you kind of feel like, nah. But I think our default emotional expression toward a dad like that has to be compassion. Because here's the thing about that dad. His dad taught him that that was the way to do it, and his dad's dad taught his dad that that was the way to do it. They don't know any better, these poor people. I mean, I'm here, I'm a voice in the wilderness shouting, get your kids out, but 99.995% of the rest of the world is telling that dad that he's doing the right thing. And that the only problem is they didn't ask you about the pills, Dad. The pills are a good thing, too. They just need to be administered properly. You know, to take your daughter down to the therapist. There you go. And then we'll get those pills. We'll get everything squared away and we'll dot all the I's, cross all the T's, and make sure that the prescription is given with the full faith and confidence of dad. Okay. So from Maine, we'll go to Russia. Russia. Well, actually, we're going to go to Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania. It's down the road from Maine. This is from the Death by Democracy file. Sam Faddis reports in AND magazine. He's reporting from Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, but he starts by reminding us of the Russian Revolution. The Russian Revolution, he says, you will read. When you read about the Russian Revolution, you read mostly about St. Petersburg and the Bolsheviks and what they did there with the chopping off of the heads and the Anastasia, that whole thing, right? But Faddis reminds us that the real way the Bolsheviks took control of Russia was in the villages, village by village, in the little village committees, or as they were called in Russia, the Soviets. So did anybody even know that? Why did we call it the Soviet Union? I never knew why we called it the Soviet Union. Well, it was because the Bolsheviks had organized in the communities these little committees. In every small town and every big city, they had a Soviet. And once the Bolsheviks chopped off the heads there in St. Petersburg, then the Soviets were all in place. All their little committees were there. And so they took over the society in a moment. And that's how the Bolsheviks transformed the society, was via these Soviets, little town by little town. And then Sam takes us to Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, a rural county in northeast Pennsylvania with a population of about 40,000, small town, rural America, about as red as you can get. And not red in the sense of the Bolsheviks and the communists. Red as in the sense of Republican, which is really weird that they got dubbed red. I'm not sure when. Anyway, that's a whole different story. But what Sam is trying to imply is Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, is about as conservative as you can get, and small town, rural America, rock-ribbed conservative. And the county library there is headed by a person who recently announced they're adopting a new policy under which all records of all people holding library cards, all records will be confidential. No one other than the individual holding the card could see the library records without a court order. And so this sounds wonderful, right? We all want our privacy. We don't want people to be able to look at what we're checking out of the library. Although I would ask, well, why don't you want people to? That would be my first question. Now, if I had a library card and I still went to the library, which I didn't know there was even such a thing anymore, but if I did, I would be checking out conservative, Christian, creationist, right-wing materials on a regular basis. And if the government came and looked, they would say, this guy's a right-wing, Christian, conservative, creationist, maybe even a radical. We need to keep our eye on that guy. And me, personally, I'm okay with that. Keep your eye on me. Go ahead. I want you to know who I am. By the way, all through COVID, I didn't wear a mask, so they got my picture already. They know who I am. Now, why does the Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania What are they called there? The woman who runs the library, who used to be really annoying, and librarian. The library. Why does the librarian want to keep everybody's checkouts a secret? Oh, it's so that the minor children can check out dirty books from the library and their parents won't be allowed to see. Kids will be provided material directly by the library and their parents will be blocked from knowing what they have checked out. And apparently this isn't just dirty books. It's also online accounts now. Oh, that, I had forgotten about that angle. And the board there, the library board up in Susquehanna County, specifically cited its desire to align itself with the policies of the American Library Association. The American Library Association, as you know, if you listen to the Weekly Worldview, is run by a self-described queer Marxist named Emily Drabzinski, who is hell-bent on destroying America and molesting as many children as she possibly can. Sam Faddis over at AND Magazine tells us, this is the revolution in action, and the revolutionaries are winning. That's the communist Bolshevik child molesting, malevolent, devious, evil, criminal revolutionaries have conquered the Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania Library Board, and they're coming for your town. And Sam's upset that this has all occurred with no bill passed. The county commission didn't take a vote without even a semblance of the democratic process. So this is the problem. This is why we are going to lose, is because the folks like Sam Faddis, who think they're on our side, they think democracy is going to solve this. So I ask Sam Faddis, if they had done it by democratic means and not in spite of it, would you be for it? If the majority expressed their desire to be given over to wickedness and communism and deviant perversion, and they all voted for it as their preferred mode of governance, now you'd have a semblance of democracy. Would you go for it now, Mr. Faddis? Would you then say that this is okay? Or would you have the common sense to stand with me and say, no, we're not going to suffer the collapse of our civilization via deviance and perversion, whether it's done by democracy or any other means? It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And taking it down a notch to the smooth, mellow sounds. Welcome back. We go from, where were we? Susquehanna, Pennsylvania. Let's go north up to Canada from the Like a Suicide File, where we check in with the Health Canada there, where Canadian doctors have, they've now come up with their first nationally accredited program regarding maids. Not maids as in people who clean your house, but maids as in people who kill your grandmother or your mother or your sister or maybe your daughter. It's a nationally accredited training program for medical assistance in dying. Maid. Let's go bring in the maid. Clean it up. That's right. Licensed physicians and nurse practitioners will soon have the opportunity to be certified in killing people. Not only in making people better if they're sick or helping them if they're injured, but also in killing them if that's determined to be necessary or desired. Desired by who? Well, for right now, it's ostensibly for the patient themselves. If they desire to be suicided, then they'll have a certified practitioner that they can go to. They'll have a certificate on the wall that says, I took the course and I am certified for medical assistance in dying. That's right. Health Canada, they issued a press release on September 13th, which would be 9/13. If you're into biblical numerology, you can look that up yourself. I'll leave that aside. Yeah, 9/13 press release. A new non-governmental organization established in, well, not that new, established in 2016 after the federal medical assistance in dying legislation was first enacted. The institution, this NGO, was created in order to address the needs, the need to establish training resources to create medical standards and encourage the standardization of care across the country, care being medical assistance in dying. Care now being also including killing. Not to put too fine a point on it, but so they have a curriculum there at the Medical Assistance in Dying Certification Club, whatever, I'm sure it has a name. The curriculum in Medical Assistance in Dying curriculum is accredited by the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada and the College of Family Physicians of Canada. So it's double board certified. And it includes procedures for medical assistance in dying for individuals with mental disorders. So that was a bit of a sticking point, is that they were killing people left and right, willy-nilly, and some of them had mental disorders. And now they've got some rules in order to tighten up the killing of people with mental disorders so that now it can be used on dissenters and Christians. Oh, wait, I added that part. I added it for now. It will be added later as the Christians and the dissenters, people who don't like Trudeau or the descent of Canada into a radical tyranny, Bolshevik style, the people who don't like that, they'll be added later. I'm adding it now, but the Christians and the dissenters will be added later. The program is designed to address complicated issues, you know, along with the government's expanding scope of, you know, who may consider seeing the maid. People who want to die for reasons that go beyond the mere terminal illness. Uh-huh. So when this all ostensibly passed with some semblance of democracy, by the way, Sam Faddis, just in case you were concerned. The Canadian people voted for this. But back then, it was just thought that it would only be people who have a terminal, you know, the people who are suffering from the terrible cancer pain and the tits, all that's it. And now it'll be people who want to die for reasons that go beyond mere final illness considerations. And then after that, it'll go from people who want to die to people who we want to kill. And now I just added that part. For now, that's I just added it. But take my word for it, it's just a matter of time. New standards of care. Just like medication abortion, right? Or as my extremely attractive audio engineer pointed out, our medication, our rat medication that we have. I place it around the property about once a week, rat medication, and the rats come into the little black box, and they have some of the rat medication, and then the rats are dispatched on into eternity. Let's see here. So the medical assistance in dying, the expansion of the scope, it may strike you right now as just it's a political issue between those who hate Trudeau and his acolytes. And for right now, it's just his acolytes who are going to want to kill those who are not. But it's a much bigger issue up in Canada because up in Canada, both sides, the people who hate Trudeau and the people who are his acolytes, both sides are filled with suicidal murderers who hate God and themselves. And so Canada, in my humble opinion, is going to be the first Western nation to collapse into a melee of murder-suicide. And it's going to be really ugly in Canada first, and then it's going to sweep down and around. And anyway, I have a feeling things are going to get really ugly before they get better. That's just a vibe I have. I hope I'm wrong. So let's check in on how things are going in Canada. We go into the decline and fall file, where reports this week were that anti-grooming protests swept across Canada. That's right, anti-grooming protests. Hundreds and hundreds and even thousands of people gathered to protest, telling trans activists to, quote, leave the kids alone, unquote. That's right. Thousands of people organized peaceful protests in Ottawa, Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal. All over, eh? That's right. It was parents gathering to peacefully protest sexually deviant, criminally insane perverts hell-bent on molesting children. One Canadian mother said that she will not stop speaking out until this radical gender ideology is vanquished and removed from our children's lives. That was one of the moms. We have a dad here who was involved in the protest. He was holding a newborn, carrying his newborn out there on the streets, and he said, quote, we are not here for hate. I don't know why there's a lot of talk about hate. We respect everybody, but our children, that's a line that's drawn. We're drawing the line at our children, said the dad marching with the newborn in the streets there. And so, unfortunately, Dad, you are incorrect. And it's sad that he doesn't realize it, but he's incorrect. So making criminals stop their criminal behavior must involve, at times, force and even violence if necessary. So if you disagree with that, you misunderstand a functioning civilization. A functioning civilization demands that making criminals stop must involve force and at some times even violence. Well, up in Canada, the Canadians' tolerance for sexual immorality and deviance has been going on for so long that now the parents are freaking out that all these transvestite perverts want to molest their kids. And now the Canadians think it's time for peaceful protests against criminally insane deviants who want to molest your kids. And they want to stop it peacefully and without any hate, because they don't understand how far down the rat hole they are. A note to Canadian parents: if you don't hate sin, it will devour your children right in front of your face, which is what's happening. And why is it happening? It's because the West has been casually imbibing legalized sexual immorality for about three generations now. And they've been doing so thinking they could restrain it if it ever got really out of hand. Like, you know, like people dressing up like comic book characters marching down the street talking about taking my child. Like, if it ever got out of hand like that, you know, we would stop. And that's what they thought. They thought they could restrain it if it ever got really crazy. You know, like Mardi Gras marching through your living room into your kid's bedroom and grabbing your kid and taking them out the window. If it ever got anything like that, well, we would stop it. Well, that's where it is. It's like trans freaks dressed up as satanic comic book characters marching right into your children's room, bedroom, and taking them. That's where it is. And the poor parents in Canada, they no longer even know where to draw the line. So So their children are going to be devoured right before their very eyes as the Canadians shake themselves awake and decide it's time for a peaceful protest in the street, free of any hate for anyone. Even the comic book character who just marched into my daughter's bedroom, I don't hate them. This is all peaceful. And so here's what's the problem there is now this is the casual sexual immorality that you've tolerated for a generation or two or three has now produced a generation of unrestrained criminal perverts who want your kids. And the restraining of that will require more than a peaceful, hate-free protest. Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. And you know, the more I study the Bible and do Bible studies, the less interest I have in the news of the day, the news of the week. And so it's getting harder and harder for me to look at the news and find stories that I find worthy of downloading, printing, and actually commenting on. And so when I came to the microphone this week, I had a really thin stack of news, and I was like, I just don't care about almost any of this anymore. Like this story, Ken Buck from the Pass the Buck file. Ken Buck, a congressman from Colorado, is apparently considering leaving Congress for a job at CNN. And conservatives and Republicans are shocked by this. Because, as the New York Post reports, Ken Buck is a five-time conservative fiscal hawk. And his eyeing a job at CNN has surprised fellow conservatives. At which point I'm like, are you kidding me? Who thought Ken Buck was a conservative? That's just... Who was bamboozled by that? It's no wonder the country's going down the toilet. People think Ken Buck is a conservative. But the New York Post reports Ken Buck has said privately he is interested in a job at CNN. And so the thing is, we all knew, those of us in Colorado who were actually conservatives, we knew back in 2012 what Ken Buck was. That he was nothing more than a nakedly ambitious coward and a villain. The lowest order of scum who would cut his mother's throat and cut your child's throat right in front of you and right in front of his mother for money and power. That's all Ken Buck was ever about. And in Colorado, we knew it because he stabbed us in the back 10 years ago. More than 10 years ago, we knew exactly what Ken Buck was. Ken Buck was our final class on what the Republican Party actually was. And after that, we all graduated and we all knew. But apparently, there's still a bunch of relatively dim-witted morons in the Republican Party and in the electorate at large. And consumers of the New York Post and the right-wing websites who are shocked that Ken Buck is a coward and a villain of the lowest order who would sell his mother into slavery for a job at CNN. Color me not surprised. So from there, we go into the public health emergency file where another public health emergency occurred this past week. Let's see. This was off Petluck Avenue near New Laredo Highway in San Antonio, where at about 2:30 in the morning, an ex-boyfriend showed up at his ex-girlfriend's house. And the ex-boyfriend noticed that his ex-girlfriend had a visitor who was also a boy. And so a fight broke out, as you can well imagine. The ex-boyfriend pulled out a machete and attacked his ex-girlfriend's new friend. He attacked him with a machete. Now, the new friend, the new boyfriend, wrestled the machete away from the old boyfriend and hit it with him several times. In fact, the Fox San Antonio story says that the new boyfriend hit the ex-boyfriend several times with the bladed object. And you're reading the story and you're like, well, you already said it was a machete. So why would you say... I guess that's to let you know that he didn't hit him with the chopping end of the machete, or he hit him somewhat ineffectually with the machete because he wasn't able to chop off a hand or an ear or his head. How do you hit somebody with a machete and not cut them? Anyway, that's, I think, what they're trying to establish here in the true style of a legalistic urinalist, is to say that he hit him with the bladed object, but the other man wasn't cut. Anyway, police arrived. There was a suspect in the driveway bleeding from his head. The ex-boyfriend was taken to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. I'm sorry. That's the new boyfriend. That's the visitor, the friend who happened to be at the girl's house at 2:30 in the morning. He was a friend. He was a visitor. Mm-hmm. He was taken to the hospital with life-threatening injuries. The ex-boyfriend is in serious condition. The woman was not injured, at least not physically, but she was detained for questioning. She's no doubt emotionally, spiritually, total basket case. So she was detained for questioning. The first question that authorities should ask her: do you wish you'd never slept with either one of these guys? That would be the first question. Her answer would be yes, but I'm a total mess. Please help me. And if we had a functioning judicial system, there would be someone on hand with a Bible that they would point this poor girl to, and they would be able to help her sort out, why are you shacking up with various guys? Do you see what happens now? One ends up attacking the other with a machete, and that's not good for anyone. And that's beside the machete attack and the two guys in custody. That's beside the fact that you are an emotional, spiritual, physical basket case who obviously needs help. What on earth happened to you, young lady? And then she would go through her entire life story in the last 20 years of Western civilization and how it basically destroyed her and ruined her and turned her into just a slut who ended up just really needing help. And I wish I was there to help her. I would try to point her in the right direction. Nobody in the justice system or the mental health system or the public health system is going to have any clue what to tell this poor girl to do with the visual she now has to live with of one boyfriend hacking the other with a machete. That doesn't help. Or you need a lot of help to come out of that. All right. Now, from there, we go to the justice system file, where out in Las Vegas, you remember we covered the story last week of the teenagers in the car who intentionally ran over a guy on a motorcycle. I'm sorry, he wasn't on a motorcycle. He was on a bicycle. And the two teenagers live streamed themselves running him over and laughed about it. They intentionally struck and killed what turned out to be retired police chief, a man who turned out to be the retired police chief out there in Las Vegas. So now there's video of the kid, the 17-year-old punk, when the police arrested him. At the time of his capture, Jesus Ayala, 17 years old, showed no remorse. Yahoo News, the Associated Press, says he appeared to show no remorse. Well, you watch the video, and it's not that he appeared to show no remorse. He showed no remorse while being taken into custody. How do we know? Because of what he said on video as he was being arrested. As he was being arrested, the punk said, quote, "You think this juvenile bleep bleep is going to do some bleep bleep? I'll be out in 30 days, I bet you." That's what he said to the cops. I'll be out in 30 days, I bet you. This is a juvenile blankety blank, whatever. He said, it's just a hit and run, man. I get a slap on the wrist. Bleep, bleep. That was all on videotape. You watch it for yourself and tell me if this is him allegedly appearing to show no remorse. Or is this a young man who is an accidentally, incidentally trained killer, trained by the justice system to think that he could run over somebody on purpose and because it was a juvie hit and run, he'd be out in a month. That's what he thought when he ran the guy over, not realizing that he might kill the guy and end up being charged with murder or manslaughter or whatever they charge him with, and then he'll have to cut a deal with the DA and he'd probably be in jail for some time longer than 30 days, but probably not that much longer. I mean, at least in light of the length of time the police chief will remain dead, when you compare that amount of time to the amount of time that this 17-year-old punk is going to end up in jail, it'll be a relatively short time. But it'll be more than the 30 days that the kid thought when he actually ran the guy over. So an incidentally, unintentionally trained killer, trained by the justice system, carrying out what he was trained to do against a guy who just happened to be the retired police chief. Just happened to be. Which is ironic that the victim was working in the system that trained the guy who killed him. That's just ironic. Okay, so from there, we go into the killer politics file. Killer politics. This is... Whew. For those of you who are in the Republican Party and you have your MAGA hat, and Donald Trump is probably the last... He's the last man between America and 1,000 years of darkness, in your opinion. And the election in 2024 is obviously the most important election of our lifetime. If we don't take America back from the Biden administration and the Obamas behind the curtains running, if we don't take America back, it's all over. Well, take this into account here. A report from The Federalist, at an interview that Donald Trump did at NBC. Donald Trump said in an interview with NBC's, whatever it is, I forget the show, the Sunday show. It's a religious show. It's where people who used to go to church, they now go there on Sunday morning. And they watch the NBC, the ABC, the CBS, and the Fox News show. Now, they don't watch MSNBC because it's not like they're going to hell or anything. I mean, for crying out loud, we're conservatives. But they watch NBC's Sunday morning worship, and he was up there on stage with one of the high priestesses, Kristen, there. And he said on the Sunday show that he's going to come up with a number of weeks or months regarding abortion. We're going to come up with a number of weeks or months that makes people happy. And we're going to come up with a number that makes people happy regarding when it's okay to murder innocent children. That's what he said. And I mean, wow, this guy is a cold-blooded, evil guy, Donald Trump. Cold-blooded, evil. Now listen. Here's what the Republican over at the Federalist, here's what he writes about what Donald Trump just said. Instead of being shocked and saying, I can't believe Donald Trump is so evil to say that he's going to come up with a number and negotiate and make everybody happy. That's what the Federalist reporter should say. But no, what he says is, he says, what nonsense? Has a single Democrat ever articulated a stage of pregnancy after which they would support an abortion ban? No, they haven't. Those darn Democrats support zero limits on abortion, even up to the point of birth. And they're also, by the way, opposed to doctors providing infants who survived abortions any care. Even if they survive an attempted abortion, that's right. That's how bad those Democrats are. No care, even if they survive. So the Federalist author here, the reporter, He continues to harden the new pro-life standard, which we're going to dub the Trump standard. The new pro-life standard is the Trump standard. What is it? Well, what do you like? What would make you happy? 6 weeks? 12? 22? 24? How many dead kids and where and when? What's your number that'll make you happy? That's the Trump standard. That's the new pro-life standard. And so the Federalist author, I mean, he buys into it in the first two paragraphs, but then it's like he catches himself. He says, now, the exchange between Kristen on NBC and Trump, it did expose Trump's utterly transactional approach to abortion. The Federalist reporter says, clearly Trump has no philosophical or theological convictions about abortion. That was clear as far back as 2016. Trump, a lifelong pro-abort Democrat, suddenly became a pro-life Republican. So why did the pro-life movement support him? Listen to what here's what the author says. Because when you really believe, as pro-lifers do, that human lives are at stake, you're willing to engage in nakedly transactional politics to save as many of those lives as possible. In this, the pro-life movement shares striking similarities with the abolitionist movement of the antebellum era, willing to accept compromise, blah, blah, blah. And then the reporter goes on to talk about things he doesn't understand. So the pro-life movement does not, well, it does represent antebellum Republicans who thought they could compromise here and there and there and there. But what they didn't realize was that in a moment, it was abolition that finally ended slavery, not their immoral compromises. It was abolition that was moral. Not limiting and affirming the owning of human beings as chattel property. That turned out to be wrong. And it didn't work. It was abolition and it worked in a moment. And all the people who had supported affirming and limiting slavery here and there, they all looked like what they were, cowards. And the people who stood for abolition, in a moment, they all looked like heroes. And they were heroes up until about 15 years ago when the pro-life movement abandoned the abolitionist position and became regulators and child killers themselves. And they all call themselves pro-life. And they're willing to negotiate. And even the author here at The Federalist, he's willing to negotiate. Can he come up with a number that makes him happy? If you do, he'll call himself pro-life. He'll call it an end of the day, and hopefully it'll put the Republican in office, because that's really what's important, and it's very sad. All right, and so that brings us finally to the death after Roe file, where this is a perfect emblem of the depravity of the pro-life political animal. It's just sad. This headline from Breitbart: Tuberville scores a win against abortion. And you're like, huh? Tommy Tuberville, isn't he the senator who's been holding the line, not allowing any votes on military promotions until the Pentagon stops funding like abortion vacation, something like that, right? Well, what was Tuberville's win against abortion? Tuberville achieved a victory over Chuck Schumer by forcing him to cave on his refusing to bring military nominations to the floor individually. Tuberville has blocked the Senate from approving military nominations without debate on unanimous consent in order to protest the Pentagon's abortion policies. Schumer has attacked Tuberville. Tuberville then slyly used a Senate procedure to bring one of the military promotions to the Senate floor, causing Schumer to now relent and scramble quickly to set up votes on individual nominations for military promotions. Tuberville noted that the long-running fake law that allegedly bans taxpayer-funded abortion passed with the support of Democrats, and that it's been working for 30 years. Did you know there's been a law against federally funded abortion for 30 years? That's right. Now, the federal government has funded abortion clinics like Planned Parenthood for those same 30 years. But Tommy Tuberville points out that, hey, we had a law in place. It was a fake law, and it's worked for 30 years. And then all of a sudden, the Pentagon was going to start paying for travel time and giving military people 3 weeks off to travel to receive an abortion. And Tuberville thought that looked, well, did he say it looked wrong? Well, apparently it looked like a political opportunity, because here's what Tuberville says. When he found out the Pentagon was going to fund vacations for abortions, he said, we polled it, and 60% of the people said they didn't want it. And so that's where Tuberville draw the line, right there. Had a political opportunity to, that's right, travel. Well, hey, Tommy, what if it went the other way? What if 60 people would have said they were okay with the Pentagon funding abortions? And what about the fact, Tommy, that dollars, money, is actually fungible? And the Department of Defense and the federal government has been paying for abortions for 30 years. And your support for the fake law just means you're a lying, hypocrite Republican. Evangelical phony, that's what you are. And you're a perfect representative of the pro-life movement as it stands today, as we live through death after Roe. And the God-given right to life is basically off the table. It's not up for debate anymore. The pro-lifers sacrifice that in order to supposedly save as many lives as they could. Very sad. All right, so that's it for the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio. And should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.